the headlines this hour. As the U.S. is slowly genocide in Gaza continues for the 155th day, the death toll nears 31,000, mostly women and children. The military wing of Hamas says its main priority in a potential prisoner swap deal with Israel is a complete end to the aggression in the Gaza Strip. Also in the headlines, in another weekend of worldwide protests, people have taken to the streets in a show of solidarity with Palestinians in the war-ravaged Gaza Strip. Well, welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. More than 5 months into the Israeli genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, the regime's bombing campaign keeps taking innocent lives in the besieged Palestinian territory. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 82 more Palestinians have been killed and 122 wounded in the Israeli attacks since Friday. A number of the victims remain under the rubble of the bombed-out buildings or are left unattended in the streets as Israeli forces prevent emergency relief workers from reaching them. The death toll from the onslaught on Gaza that began on October the 7th is now approaching 31,000. Over 72,500 people have also been wounded, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. 72% of the victims are women and children. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the people of Palestine are facing unprecedented U.S.-Israeli hostility as the Gaza Strip is still under bombardment and siege. The spokesman for the Al-Qassam Brigades described Israel as an occupying regime devoid of humanitarian values, adding that Nazi-like massacres are being perpetrated in Gaza. Abu Beda noted that international law is unable to stop Israel from committing crimes against Palestinians. He said the rules of the international community are worn out and ineffective, adding that those rules are at the service of hegemonic powers. He also touched upon the ceasefire talks, saying the main priority in a potential prisoner swap deal with Israel is a complete end to the aggression on the Gaza Strip. Abu Beda also referred to the anti-Israeli operation launched by Palestinians in early October. He emphasized that the Al-Aqsa flood operation was a response to decades of enmity and atrocities against Palestinians. A ship carrying humanitarian aid is expected to depart Cyprus for Gaza this weekend as part of a maritime corridor announced by the EU. The Spanish vessel Open Arms is scheduled to head for an undisclosed location off the coast of Gaza. It will reportedly tow a barge located with 200 tons of food. The EU Commission President talked about the opening of the sea corridor during her visit to a Cypriot port on Friday. President Joe Biden also on Thursday announced the U.S. plan to build a floating dock off the Gaza shore. However, it is unclear if there is a link between the weekend shipments and the U.S. plan. The expected delivery comes amid warnings that aid trucks must be allowed to enter Gaza in order to genuinely alleviate the humanitarian crisis there. The UN has stressed that land transport is the main artery of delivering supplies. The Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative says the plan to build a port off Gaza is aimed at diverting attention from the real issues that Gazans are grappling with. The Gaza-bound ship belongs to the Spanish aid group Open Arms, whose founder talked about the aid shipment to the besieged strip through a sea route from Cyprus. Let's now listen to the founder, Oscar Camps.
We will sell this platform to Gaza, where the last mile will be the most complicated operation. The disembarkation will be done on a pier that is being built right now by the World Central Kitchen. This mission is a coalition between the World Central Kitchen and Open Arms. We provide the technical part and they provide the food and reception. We are not concerned at all about security. We are concerned about the security and lives of the people who are in Gaza, who have neither food nor medicine to treat chronic pathologies or the wounded.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says Israel tortured and forced members of its staff to falsely confess links to the Palestinian resistance group Hamas. UNRWA report detailed interviews from staffs who were deliberately targeted and abducted, said that they were subjected to various types of tortures, including sexual violence, humiliation, waterboarding, and threats of harm to the family. The UN agency said these individuals were then forced to sign false confessions, stating that some staffs took part in the Al-Aqsa flood operation. UNRWA said it will present the report to relevant UN agencies for further investigation. Israel alleges that 12% of UNRWA's 13,000 staff are members of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. In January, the regime accused 12 staffers of the group involvement in the October 7 operation. This meant that this allegation led to many countries cutting off much-needed fund to the UN agency. Mutaba Musab is a correspondent joining us from Darabala to tell us more about this. We have Asad Abu Shark, who's a Palestinian academic and activist, joining us from Dublin. Welcome to you both. Mutaba Musab, let me first start with you. If you can please tell us more about this report and how it debunks the false narrative that's out there by Israel, which had the support of some of its allies, like the U.S. and some of the top donors.
Yes, Kobe. Actually, before answering your question, let me just say that over the last couple of hours, the Israeli warplanes renewed and intensified their attacks against the central area of Gaza Strip. At least 13 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, were reportedly unalived and killed by those airstrikes that hit three residential buildings simultaneously in an Nusayrat refugee camp. In addition to that, other three Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed by an Israeli attack that was carried out by the Israeli fighter drones in the same area in the northern part of an Nusayrat refugee camp. And in Khan Yunis city, at least 10 Palestinian dead bodies were extracted from the rubbles of those destroyed houses, particularly in the eastern part of Khan Yunis city, Al-Karara neighborhood and the Abassan neighborhood. Those areas have been subjected to heavy bombardments over the last couple of weeks. Hundreds of the Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed while dozens are still trapped under the rubble of those destroyed houses. The Israeli occupation forces are still preventing the Palestinian paramedics and the Palestinian medical staff from evacuating those people, and the Palestinian medical staff were able just to extract them after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from those parts. In the same context, the Israeli starvation war on Gaza still continues as it was reported that another Palestinian baby was killed by that starvation, and another young girl also passed away over the suffering from the dehydration and the malnutrition inflicted by the continuous and the deliberate deprivation of the basic humanitarian needs. When it comes to the UNRWA, as you know, that all these claims promoted by the IOF, according to the Palestinian people here, are lame excuses in order to tighten the grip on the Palestinian people and increase the suffering of the Palestinian people here, because as you know, that UNRWA is the lifeline for the Palestinian refugees here in Gaza Strip, because I mean that the people are completely depending and relying on the supply presented by the UNRWA to those Palestinian refugees. Roughly 70-75% of the population are refugees here in Gaza Strip, and it was known that the Israelis and the Israeli occupation forces, since the very beginning of this onslaught, have been relying on tightening the grip on the UNRWA in order to deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people. This is on one hand. On the other hand, there is some kind of political aspect and dimension behind that. Those claims and those excuses and those justifications claimed by the Israeli occupation forces, which is to liquidate the UNRWA in order to finish the right of return of the Palestinian people, because having the UNRWA available and effective on the ground means that the whole world will remember the right of return of the Palestinian people.
Indeed. And that's the question I want to ask you, Asad Abu Shark. When you take a look at the way that UNRWA has been falsely accused by putting out this narrative that Israel has put out there, which resulted in the loss of some of the major donors, we can see the different goals that Israel has had. And this is not the first time that Israel has tried to basically not only defund UNRWA, but to get rid of it. What do you think are the goals behind this, now that we have news surfacing that they were forced into false confessions, the one that they spoke to?
Thank you very much. You know that when UNRWA was established following the first Nakba in 1948, the mandate given to UNRWA is to continue its relief work and aid to the Palestinian people until the right of return and compensation of all the Palestinian refugees who were uprooted and driven out by the Zionist terrorist gangs are reinstated and return to their villages, towns, and property from which they were violently uprooted by the Zionist gangs. This is the mandate of the UNRWA ever since. And ever since, the Israelis have been trying to get rid of UNRWA because it is the living political and legal and human witness to their crime of approaching the Palestinian refugees from their own land. And this is why the conspiracy against UNRWA has been continuing ever since. And this is not the first time, actually. Israel has always been doing its efforts in order to cancel, to abrogate UNRWA, in order to liquidate the right of return for the Palestinian refugees and to deface its crime against the Palestinian people. And this is why these are false accusations. These are false accusations against probably 10 or whatever, or 7 members working for the UNRWA. And then the Europeans and the Americans, who also were interested in liquidating the UNRWA, unfortunately, took the Israeli narrative seriously. I can tell you one thing, and after Oslo, I was one of those negotiators who were negotiating with the Americans about UNRWA, and the Americans were interested in liquidating UNRWA. I told them in plain English and Arabic language, the mandate of UNRWA will only finish when every Palestinian refugee returns to his home from which he was uprooted by the Zionist gang. This is according to resolution number 194, which calls for the right of return and compensation. And this is also according to the resolution, UN resolution 302, which established UNRWA in 1949.
Thank you very much. Asad Abu Sharq, Palestinian academic and author there, talking to us from Dublin. Muti Abu Musaba, thank you so much. Our correspondent from Darabala. With that, we come to an end for this news review. The Yemeni Army spokesman has acknowledged 2 fresh strikes on American naval targets, retaliation for U.S.-British acts of aggression against its country.
The naval forces and the air force of the Yemeni armed forces carried out 2 specific military operations. The first operation targeted the American ship Propelled Fortune in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles, while the second operation targeted a number of American destroyers at the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden with 37 drones, and the 2 operations successfully achieved their goals.
Sari reiterated that the Yemeni armed forces will press ahead with their operations in the Red Sea and Arabian Seas until Israel halts its genocidal war against Palestinians and lifts the siege on the Gaza Strip. He also expressed his gratitude to the Yemeni people for their demonstrations in the capital Sana'a and elsewhere in solidarity with Palestinians. The Yemeni forces first launched their operations against Israeli or Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea in solidarity with Gazans. Recently, they have intensified their attacks on U.S. and British ships, retaliation for the 2 countries' aggression against Yemen. Protests have been held in several countries across the globe in support of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Tens of thousands of people in the U.K. capital London marched towards the U.S. embassy. They demanded immediate delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza amid the dire situation there. The protesters said Western countries should stop their military and financial support for the Tel Aviv regime. They also call for an immediate end to the U.S.-Israeli genocide.
Stop the genocide. Stop arming Israel. Stop killing children and babies. This cannot continue. We must stop it. We need peace. End the bloodshed. No more. We need to boycott this regime. It's unacceptable. No right-minded human being can accept this to carry on any longer.
A similar demonstration was also held in the Indonesian capital, Jakarta, in front of the U.S. Embassy. Protesters condemned the continued Israeli blockade and bombardment of Palestinians in Gaza. They were angry with the U.S. support for Israel and demanded opening of aid routes into Gaza. In Yemen, Sana'a, civil servants took part in a military parade and voiced their support for Palestinians. They reaffirmed their commitment to Palestine and said that they will never abandon the Palestinian cause.
The parade today comes after a precise military training period to express the triumph of rights and principles against injustice and tyranny. The Palestinian people are going through something against human nature and what life should be like in relation to preserving human rights and owning the land to its people.
We came here to witness the readiness and alertness against tyranny, against the arrogance of the US, UK and Israelis, and in support of our brothers in Gaza and Palestine. We came here to see the graduates of the training course Al-Aqsa Floods. This is the official rush and general mobilization against God's enemies, to send a message to them that whatever they do, we will be there for them and ready in support of our brothers in Gaza and Palestine.
On to Austria, pro-Palestinian protesters there have held a demonstration during an International Women's Day event in the capital, Vienna. They aim to raise the public awareness of the plight of the women in Gaza. Our correspondent, Dieter Reinisch, has interviewed some of the demonstrators.
So today we gathered and we were present at the Vienna Rathaus municipality on an open event on the occasion of International Women's Day. We wanted to protest the hypocrisy of the celebration. We wanted to remind everyone that women's rights is for everyone. We wanted to give raise awareness about the situation of Palestinian women in Gaza who are suffering the worst condition ever since the 5 months. Every single day, 63 women are being murdered. So far, 9,000 women are killed by the Israeli occupation forces. There are 60,000 women pregnant currently at risk of dying for lack of food, for lack of healthcare. So we wanted to synthesize everybody about that.
So today is the Global Day for Women. It should be a day for celebration. It should be a day and an opportunity for us to rejoice. But we cannot celebrate this day knowing that our sisters in Palestine are suffering, and they haven't only been suffering these last 5 months, but also the past 75 years. We have heard the most gruesome reports about women having to undergo cesareans without an anesthesia. It's just a despicable situation and it's absolutely intolerable. And we refuse as women to only focus on, let's say, white women feminism. It is important to improve our rights here in the West, but we really have to stand up for those people in other countries who are suffering and who are struggling to survive. And that is our obligation if we want to stand together as women worldwide.
And that does it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
In Gaza, every fishing trip is a brush with death for the Palestinian fishermen setting out at dawn in small wooden boats. Since the Zionist regime's war on Gaza, the regime's restrictions have only grown tighter, and the danger of providing food for 2.2 million starving Palestinians has grown exponentially. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East I wrote, every morning at daybreak, Mahmoud Hamada pushed his boat out to sea knowing he may never return. He told Middle East I last month on the beach in central Gaza's Deir al-Balah, you can fish during the early hours, but you know for sure that you will be shot at once it approaches noon. Gaza's 4,000 fishermen are a backbone of the Palestinian enclave's society, providing fresh fish despite severe restrictions on fishing that the Zionist regime has placed on Gaza's waters. Since the Zionist regime's war on Gaza, those restrictions have only grown tighter, and the danger of providing food for 2.2 million starving Palestinians has grown exponentially. Hamada said, "You have a limited space that might be safe to fish in. If you go further, an Israeli ship will approach and kill you. I have been working for more than 20 years as a fisherman, but I have never gone through such a time. I just wish this war ends very soon because we've been bleeding for 5 months and we can't bear it anymore." 2 weeks later, Hamada was shot dead as he tried to rescue a 9-year-old child under the Zionist regime fire. Hamada's son, Muhammad 15, watched his father's killing. He told MEE, "The sniper shot the child twice in his neck, and his head fell off his body. My father tried to take his corpse. The least he could do. Unfortunately, a tank shot him in his head, annihilating his skull." The father's aide once had a workshop near his house in Gaza City's Ashanti refugee camp. Full of tools, he'd collected over 2 decades of work. Both were completely destroyed by the Zionist regime's bombardment, and Hamada and his family were living in a tent in Deir al-Balah when he was killed. Hamada told MEE before his death, "We are literally fighting for our existence, which is fading gradually." Hamada's death shows nowhere is safe for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Yet, with the Zionist regime allowing barely any aid into the war-torn enclave, leading to at least 17 people dying of starvation, and NGOs and a UN expert warning of a looming famine, the particularly perilous job of fishermen has never been more important. Imad Al-Aghra, a fisherman from Deir al-Balah, said he has been shot at about 20 times in recent months. He told MEE, "Every time I was attacked directly by the Israeli Navy, I know it's life-threatening, but how can I live if I don't make a living through my profession as a fisherman?" Aghra and his fellow fishermen use small, simple boats made of wood or plastic. Their oars are homemade. He said, "Sometimes we use our hands instead. Once we get in the sea, the military ship approaches and it starts shooting us. But why? We're just fishermen." Before the October 7th events, Palestinian fishermen were allowed to fish 6 miles off Gaza coast, though that limited the size and variety of fish that Palestinians could catch. Fishermen, nonetheless, were able to provide Gazan dinner tables with sardines, prawns, tuna, octopus, and much more. Today, much less of the coastal waters is accessible, and catches are more meager as a result. Agra said he gets about 2 or 3 kilograms of fish a day now, around a quarter of what he caught before the war. He said, "The maximum distance we can get to is around 400 meters. Every day is a different challenge. You may be attacked at 10 meters, 50 meters, 200 meters, or 400 meters, but it's impossible to get further. Once you're seen, you can hear the echo of bullets hitting your boat. Most of the time, we have to get off our boats and swim to survive. It's so terrifying." Last month, Agra's relative was killed by the Zionist regime's gunfire as he was out fishing, shot twice in the neck. The man who was with him is still in intensive care. And there is no guarantee that enduring all this will result in a catch at all, Agra said. "Most of the days, we get nothing. What can you tell your starving family when you come back empty-handed? It's so painful." The Zionist regime's war on Gaza has killed more than 30,000 Palestinians and created a humanitarian crisis. Recently, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, said about 97 trucks of aid were entering Gaza a day last month, down from 150 in January. The agency says 508 trucks are needed a day to meet Palestinians' acute needs. As food becomes scarcer, its prices rise. Hossein al-Ramlavi, a father of four from Gaza City's Al-Tofah district, currently displaced to Deir al-Balah, said it's difficult to find any fish on the market. He told MEE, "What is found is so little. The fish is so expensive. For example, you can buy a kilo of prawns for $45, but it's simply unaffordable."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
The audience of IRB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that He gives us these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. Ali is that embodiment, yeah, of the perfect human being. That means whatever quality you want to find that will help us get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we find it in Ali. But when you look at the books, you know, as I said, the hardest part about delivering a lecture, yeah, without a doubt, is to find a topic for the lecture. Yeah, because once you find a topic, and then Allah opens doors, you know, but Allah wants to see me struggle finding a topic, you know, and hard finding a topic, right? Because you want to discuss and try to encapsulate an individual who cannot be encapsulated, you know. And when I looked at the books, you know, and what becomes clear is that there is one quality that Ali, alayhi salam, seemed to love more than other qualities. And it was the quality of justice, yeah, adalat, yeah. When you look at how much Ali, alayhi salam, emphasized justice, right? And this is what I want to talk about a little bit today. But when you look at Ali's relationship with justice, you find that Ali alayhi salam's relationship with justice was built on two components. On one side, Ali loved justice. Yeah? You can't put it any other way. Ali loved justice. Ali loved to be part of the process of justice. You know, we get this very famous tradition where Abdullah bin Abbas says, دَخَلْتُ عَلَىٰ أَمِيرِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ عَلِيِ بْنَ أَبِي طَالِبَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ اللَّهُمَّ صَلِّ عَلَىٰ مُحَمَّدْ وَعَلِي مُحَمَّدْ وَهُوَ يَخْصِفُ نَعْلَهُ, while he was stitching his sandals. Yeah, we've heard this, right? We tell this to our kids. He was stitching his sandals. Now just think about that for a second, you know? What happens when our sandals break today? We don't stitch it. We go to buy another pair of sandals, isn't it? But Ali was stitching his sandals. فَقَالَ لِي مَا قِيمَةُ هَذَا النَّعْلِ. He says to Ibn Abbas, he says, what is the value of these sandals? And he looked at the sandals and he says, لَا قِيمَةَ لَهَا. There is no value to these sandals. These have worn out in time. So Ali says, وَاللَّهِ لَهِيَ أَحَبُّ إِلَيَّ مِنْ إِمْرَتِكُمْ. Yeah? He says, I swear to you, these sandals are more valuable to me than ruling over you. That means I don't have any desire to rule over you. I don't want to be your leader. There's nothing, you know, people, when they become leaders, they walk differently. Yeah? They talk differently. Yeah? They carry themselves differently. But Ali says that I have no desire for this leadership. Illa an uqima haqqan aw adfa'a batilan. Except that it allows me to do what is right and prevent injustice. He said, that's why I'm taking this position. That's it. Yeah? Because Ali loved. I don't even know how else to put it. He loved to establish justice. That's one component of how much Ali valued justice, and what made him carry out his justice was his love. But the other component that Ali had was that he feared injustice. Yeah? And he feared being part of the process that would allow injustice to take place. You know, Amir al-Mu'mineen says in Nahjul Balagha sermon 223, he says, by God, I would rather pass a night in wakefulness on prickly thorns or be driven in chains as prisoners than meet God and His Messenger on the day of a judgment as an oppressor over people or a usurper of anything out of this worldly wealth. Ali feared doing injustice. And when you look at both of these components or both of these elements, you know, the element of love and the element of fear, whenever these two elements exist in the same weight, yeah, within an individual, love and fear, yeah, it's not one outweighs the other. No, we need both. Even in our relationship with God, yeah, there is an element of fear that is necessary, an element of love that is necessary, and one cannot outweigh the other. When these two elements, love and fear, exist united within an individual, what flows from that individual is consistency in their service to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Yeah? Pay attention. Why are we inconsistent when it comes to our service to God? Because these two elements of love and fear don't exist together within us. There are times when I love Allah, there are times when I fear Allah. The thing is that we have to have both of these elements work together simultaneously in our relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the result of both of these elements working together is consistency. And when you look at the establishment of justice in Ali, the one definition or the one way you can describe the justice of Ali alayhi salam, consistent. Yeah? The justice of Ali was consistent. It didn't matter who he was dealing with. Yeah? You look at examples of how he dealt with the rich. Oftentimes when people come to power, who are the first person they go and chate? They chate the rich. Yeah, they go after the rich because the rich will pay the light bills, isn't it? Yeah, but look at how Ali dealt with the rich. The second day of Khilafah, what does Ali do? He stands and he announces. He says, "Allah, Inna kullu qati'atin aqta'aha Uthman. Wa kullu malin a'tahu min malillah fahuwa mardudun fi baytillah. Man, yeah? You gotta have some guts to do what Ali did. Yeah? Because he knew this would affect everyone. Yeah? Everyone who had now become wealthy. Everyone who had now gained power. Ali says what? Know that any land that was given by Uthman and any wealth from God's property that he has given as a gift will be refunded back to the treasury, he says. I will bring every cent back, he says. And it's beautiful, he continues, and he says, because nothing would violate previous rights. And if I find the assets, I will restore them. Even if that money was used to conduct a marriage, I will bring that back to Baytul Mal. Ali didn't care who it would offend. Yeah, if something was wrong, there had to be the establishment of justice. This was not only how he did it, how he conducted himself with those who are wealthy. Even those who are poor were treated with justice. Yeah, it is a story we get that once a man by the name of Harith says, "Kuntu inda Aliin faatatu imraatan." That when I was seated next to Ali, and two women came to see him. And they say, "Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, innana faqiratan miskinatan." We are very poor ladies. Yeah, and so grant us something. So Ali says that if you are truly poor, you'll be granted something. And so Ali investigated, found out that these two women were truly needy. And so he ordered. He said, "Take each of them to the market. Yeah, and buy for them allotment of food, buy for them thalatha athwab, three different dresses, buy for them, and give each one of them 100 dinar from the Baytul Mal." Yeah, he gave, somebody came, he gave. Then one of these women comes to him, and she says that I deserve more, yeah, than this other lady. And he says, "Why do you deserve more than this other lady?" He says, she replies back, "Ana imra'atum min al-Arab wa hadhihi min al-Mawali." Yeah? He says that she is a slave girl while I am one from the nobility of Arabs. Yeah? Ali does something beautiful. Fatanawala shay'an min al-Ard. Ali scoops up dirt from the earth. Yeah? And he shows them, this is where we all came from. Yeah? This is what it is. He just picks up dirt. You know, sometimes an action speaks much louder than words. He picks this up. But then Ali explains. He says, "Qad qara'atu ma bayna al-lawhain." He says, "I read between the Quran. I've read the Quran. Wa ma ra'aytu li wuldika Ismail ala wuldi Ishaq fadla." He says that I have not found any advantage over the children of Ismail over the children of Ishaq, walau janaha ba'udha. Even by the wing of a mosquito, one person is not superior to another person based on race, the Imam alayhi salam said.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Ali Muhali Hakim Mateen Ghafur Shakur Wadud قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you.
Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The World Health Organization, WHO, has raised the alarm over the inhumane humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, which continues to deteriorate as the Israeli regime bombs keep falling on the besieged territory. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations reports gross human rights violations, including possible war crimes during the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. The United Nations Human Rights Office provided the information on Friday, 23rd of February, in its annual report. The Israeli regime has been waging the military onslaught since 7th of October last year, in response to Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, a surprise offensive staged by Gaza's resistance groups against the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli regime has simultaneously been employing an all-out siege against Gaza, preventing the flow of water, food, electricity and medical supplies into the territory. So far, the war has massacred tens of thousands of innocent people, many of them women and children. The United Nations report said the Israeli onslaught has led to massive suffering of Palestinians, including through the massacring of civilians on a broad scale, extensive repeated displacement of people, destruction of homes and the denial of sufficient food and other essentials for life. The United Nations report added, the blockade and siege imposed on Gaza amount to collective punishment, and may also amount to the use of starvation as a method of war, which are all war crimes. The report identified three emblematic Israeli strikes, two on the Jabalia refugee camp and one on Gaza City, which led to massive casualties and material damage. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, said, launching an indiscriminate attack resulting in death or injury to civilians, or an attack in the knowledge that it will cause extensive, incidental civilian loss, injury or damage, are all war crimes. In a broader context, the UN official reflected on the Israeli regime's decades-long occupation of the Palestinian territories. Volker Turk said, "The entrenched impunity reported by our office for decades cannot be permitted to continue. There must be accountability for violations seen over 56 years of Israeli occupation and the 16 years of blockade of the Gaza Strip." The Israeli regime came into existence in 1948 after occupying huge swathes of Palestinian territories during a Western-backed war. It occupied more land and in particular the West Bank of the River Jordan, including the city of Al-Quds and the Gaza Strip, in another such war in 1967. Ever since, it has built hundreds of settlements upon the overrun territories and deployed the most aggressive restrictions on the movement of Palestinian population there. Tel Aviv withdrew from Gaza in 2005, but has been keeping the territory under an all-out land, aerial and naval siege since 2006. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Brazilian president has repeated his recent assertion that the Israeli regime is committing genocide in the Gaza Strip, braving the repercussions that have come to affect his country's ties with the Israeli regime and its main ally, the United States. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva said at an event in Rio de Janeiro on Friday, 23rd of February, "What Israel is doing is not a war, it is genocide, because it is massacring women and children." President Lula da Silva added, "It is a genocide. Thousands of children are dead and thousands are missing. Soldiers are not dying. Women and children are dying at the hospital. If that's not genocide, I don't know what genocide is." President Lula da Silva, who once again spoke in favor of the creation of a free and sovereign Palestinian state, said, "I do not exchange my dignity for falsehood." No earlier than on Sunday, 18th of February, President Lula da Silva had unequivocally lambasted the Israeli regime's savagery in its military aggression against the coastal territory, which has so far claimed tens of thousands of Palestinian lives, many of them women and children. Addressing an African Union summit in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, President Lula da Silva said, "What's happening in Gaza isn't a war, it's genocide. It's not a war of soldiers against soldiers, it's a war between a highly prepared army and women and children." The Brazilian Foreign Ministry confirmed afterwards that the country's ambassador to the occupied Palestinian territories had been recalled for consultations, adding that it had also summoned the Israeli envoy to Brasilia. This is not the first time that the Brazilian president has singled out the Israeli regime for criticism since the onset of its military onslaught on Gaza. Speaking after a meeting with his Egyptian counterpart Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in Cairo recently, President Lula da Silva said Israel's behavior in Gaza has no explanation. The Brazilian president added, "With the pretext of fighting the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, Israel is massacring women and children." Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The World Health Organization, the WHO, has raised the alarm over the inhumane humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, which continues to deteriorate as the Israeli regime bombs keep falling on the besieged territory. The World Health Organization chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus called for an immediate halt to Israeli war crimes in Gaza and demanded unhindered access to international aid for the population of Gaza. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Gaza has become a death zone. Much of the territory has been destroyed. The head of the United Nations Health Agency also criticized the Israeli regime's military forces for bombing hospitals and medical facilities in Gaza. He said, "What type of world do we live in when hospitals must close because there is no more power or medicine to help save patients and they're being targeted by military forces?" Ghebreyesus also expressed concern about severe malnutrition amongst the population of Gaza, which has shot up dramatically since the war started, from under 1% to more than 15% in some areas, putting more lives at risk. Also, the United Nations staff members who help evacuate critically wounded patients from Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza Strip have described appalling conditions in the territory's second largest medical facility, saying it has turned into a place of death. Jonathan Withall, a senior humanitarian affairs officer at the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, in the occupied Palestinian territory, said, "The conditions are appalling. There are dead bodies in the corridors of the hospital. Patients are in a desperate situation. This has become a place of death, not a place of healing." Jonathan Whittle, who took part in evacuation missions along with teams from the World Health Organization and the Palestine Red Crescent Society on 18th and 19th of February, raised concern about conditions of dozens of patients and staff who remain trapped inside the hospital building amid intensified Israeli bombardment. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
مجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the Commander-in-Chief of Iran's Armed Forces, Imam Khamenei. Martyr Soleimani revived the resistance front and its strengthening must continue. December 31st, 2023. She, Zainab Soleimani, asked me to give her a word of advice. Very well, this is my advice. Be sincere in the things you do. In other words, don't let your egoism interfere with your intentions and your actions. Sincerity means working only for God. Wherever you have uncertainties about your egoism, distance yourself from that. In other words, it is better for a person to step away from a task rather than to do it in order to be seen. This is one point, the point about his sincerity. One point about the value of Martyr Soleimani's work, which has been and continues to be spoken about, is his role in reviving the resistance front in the region. This is a point that needs to be paid attention to. Of course, if someone is to speak about this, it should be spoken about correctly. Martyr Soleimani has played an important role in reviving the resistance front in the region, a very important role.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes we see there is a resistant group in a region. Well, yes, these existed before Martyr Soleimani as well. But there is a time when a front is created. This is what we always wanted. If the opposing side creates a front, this side must also create a front. If it weren't for this front, Gaza would not have been able to resist all this time. This resistance front gives strength to all aspects of the issue. If, for instance, four or five different groups unite, their power and strength will be more than five times as much as each individual group alone. A new identity will emerge. This new identity is very important. Martyr Qasim Soleimani played a significant role in this matter, and he worked very hard for it. People had seen his presence in the mountains of Syria, his fearlessness, and him moving toward danger. This is very important, but the main significance is that these trips, his presence, and these efforts were able to revive and strengthen the resistance front. May God exalt his rank. He pursued this work with forethought, with resourcefulness, with wisdom, with a moral behavior, with energy, and with endless effort. And this was and is very important. I hope that this movement continues by the will of God. Of course, now commander of the IRGC Quds Force is truly and honestly moving very well. Praise God, his endeavors are very good. This path of strengthening the resistance front, which Martyr Soleimani was very active in and very outstanding at, should be continued by the will of God.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.